Thank you. Let's see. I'll try sitting down so everybody can hear me and reaching way over to advance my slides. I'm Lisa Crapo from Samuels & Associates, and we're a public health research and evaluation firm located in Oakland, California. And we've been very active in California in really looking at school environments, seeing what they look like, and seeing what kinds of opportunities and challenges they present to California children in terms of being able to eat healthy foods and get physical activity at school. So today I'm going to be talking to you about school food and beverage marketing and how that really creates an environment in schools, which, as you'll see, may or may not help kids eat a healthy diet. All right, so just starting off, why should we worry about food and beverage marketing? Well, food and beverage marketing really plays a big role in influencing what children both prefer to eat and then actually select to eat. So it really sets cultural norms around what foods taste good, what foods are appealing, and just, you know, think back to your childhood. Did you think that kind of a, you know, slug green food was something appealing and delicious? You know, just raise your hand if you were eating bright green, glow-in-the-dark foods. So we're all pretty much old enough that that was before there was green ketchup, you know, green syrup to dip your Shrek French toast sticks in. But if you asked my kids, who are 7 and 11 years old, are, you know, green foods good, they'd probably answer yes. And that's because marketing has really changed our norms, even around, you know, if you look at something, does it even look like it's edible? So we also have research now that shows that advertising and marketing really impacts kids both food preferences and then their eating behaviors. And so advertising can really change what a kid will select to actually eat. And then we also know from research that kids have become major targets of food marketers and advertisers, that they spend billions of dollars trying to reach kids, and that these companies are pretty smart and do a lot of research on their own, which of course they don't tell us about, but they wouldn't be spending this much money marketing to kids if it wasn't actually doing something for their product sales. And then finally, probably the worst part of this is that we know that the foods that are most commonly marketed to kids are just the foods we don't want them to be eating: high fat, high sugar, junk foods. So marketers have selected schools as one of the many channels that they use to reach kids. And they've done this for a number of reasons. First, when kids are at school, they're a captive audience. They basically have to spend 6 hours or so a day on their school campus, and they have to just sort of look at what's around them. And schools really provide marketers with a relatively uncluttered marketing environment. So unlike television or radio or even driving down the freeway and seeing billboards, there's not a whole lot of marketing or advertising going on at school, so it makes the marketing or advertising that's there that much more visible and impactful. And then also, marketing and advertising at school affords the marketer or advertiser a certain cachet with students. If something is at school, there's sort of a tacit implication that that thing is okay, almost that the school endorses that product. And that can really help the food industry with both building brand loyalty, but then also essentially just getting kids to eat foods, getting parents to buy certain foods, especially if their kid has been exposed to those foods at schools. So that's a reason why school-based marketing really developed. Now, at schools, marketers use a variety of techniques to reach kids with their messages and their products. They use product sales, which is just the direct sale of brand name packaged products. So seeing things like the Doritos or the Pepsi or the Gatorade at school. And then there's direct advertising through signage, posters. There can even be ads on in-school broadcasting over television. And these are, you know, the signs, a sign that is just a Pepsi ad, or sometimes signage for healthier foods, like you see a lot of Got Milk posters in schools that are promoting milk. Then there's indirect advertising. And these are the activities that are a little bit more subtle and really provide the industry with a presence on school campus without them having to really get their product or their name necessarily front and center in front of the kids. And these can be things like scholarship programs, corporate-sponsored curricula. There are lots of fundraising activities that go on where food companies will either donate products that kids can sell or give away or use for prizes. There are all of the box top and kind of coupon mail-in programs where the students and families need to collect pieces of the box or a label or something like that. And then there are these egregious examples of, sending in things like, $800 worth of soup labels or something to get a $30 stapler. So there's those sort of indirect advertising. And then there's market research. And that's when companies go to a school campus and will do things like test a new product. And this can really function for two goals. So they'll go and, let's say, test a new flavor of a sports drink on campus. Well, for one, it's very important to them to get the opinions and input of their end consumers, the students at the school. But also, it's a way that they can really create buzz about a product. So if they're introducing a new product and they bring it to a school and the kids try it and they're excited about it and they've gotten to participate in this research, they can then work to spread information about that product to their friends and their peers. And so it's another way for corporations to really get a buzz about their product. So the next few slides I have are just some pictures that illustrate these types of marketing. So product sales, this is direct advertising, scoreboards. This is kind of both a direct and an indirect form of advertising. So you certainly see the Coke logo there, which is direct advertising, but probably the reason that's there is because the local Coke distributor donated that scoreboard, which the school probably would have had a hard time buying themselves, and so they were able to get their advertising in that way. Textbook covers. Here's fundraising. So again, this is having kids sell junk foods to make money for extracurricular activities. So not only is it direct product sales, but then it's also sort of this fundraising issue. And it's good PR for the companies because they can say that they're helping schools to support their important activities. Corporate logos or names on various types of school equipment. And those are the examples. So now I'm going to talk to you a little bit about a few studies that we've done and that some colleagues have done that have looked at what food and beverage advertising and marketing looks like on school campuses. So first I'll talk about some results from the HEAC study, and I'm so glad that Gail already described that, what that is, so I won't have to spend time doing that. But in the HEAC study, we visited 19 schools, and those are elementary, middle, and high schools. And so far, we've gone out and visited these schools at baseline, which was in 2005, and then we just went back in 2008 for some midpoint data. And what we found is certainly at the secondary level, a lot of vending machines, and that these vending machines had advertisements on them. And so the food vending machines tend to actually not have advertising on the front because they're sort of glass-fronted and you can just see the products, but for the most part, the beverage vending machines all do have advertising on them. And this advertising, especially as vending machines have become more sophisticated, is very visual, very attractive, and really stands out in schools because, I don't know, has anyone visited a high school recently that has a vending machine in it? So have you seen they have these sort of illuminated, very fancy, glowing ads? And, you know, when you think about kind of the typical high school, especially if it hasn't been remodeled recently, it's a little bit drab looking, and then the vending machines really stand out. So what we found when we looked at the beverage vending machine ads, and we compared what they looked like when we went out at baseline in 2005 and then 3 years later at 2008, we saw that the types of ads on these vending machines had actually really changed. And so that when we went out in 2005, there were quite a few vending machines with soda ads. There were lots with sports drinks, and then there was a smattering of other types of ads. When we went out at midpoint, and this was after all of these schools that are participating in the HEAC program had made a lot of changes to change the types of beverages they were actually selling, they'd also changed their advertising. And so here we see that we still have lots of sports drinks ads, and about almost half of the ads were for sports drinks, but sports drinks do adhere to the California standards, so these were ads that were for products that were allowed to be sold on campus. But we also see that the number of ads for water on vending machines almost doubled. And, you know, water as an unsweetened beverage is definitely something that if you're going to have to promote something to kids, you know, I guess that's kind of the best case scenario. So the other interesting thing to note with the HEAC schools is that most of these schools included a component in their wellness policy that said that only foods that adhered to the California standards could be advertised or marketed on campus. And so I think that this made a big difference with these HEAC schools, and that if we went to other schools, I'm not sure if their vending machine ads would look like this. And in fact, this next slide just shows that as schools changed the types of beverages that they were selling so that the adherence, the red line, really went up from baseline to midpoint, we saw the advertising and the adherence of the products advertised also go up when we compared baseline to midpoint. We also did another study in 2005 in conjunction with California Project Lean, and in this study, thank you. In this study, we looked a little bit more in depth at food and beverage marketing on school campuses, and we developed a tool that really looked at all the different types of marketing that are found on campuses, and we went to 20 high schools in California. And what we found during this study was that most of the advertising was for products that were discouraged. Now, again, I'd like to point out that these are not schools that had developed policies that would address school marketing. This was also before the California legislation went into effect. So we see that a lot of products that were unhealthy products were being advertised or marketed. And we categorized products as discouraged if they were essentially high calorie, high fat, high sugar, low nutrient density. Encouraged products were those that were low calorie, low fat, low sugar, and higher nutrient density. We also looked at the types of foods that were being sold for fundraisers. So remember that slide at the beginning and the little girl with the box of candy. And not surprisingly, we found a wide variety of foods being sold as fundraisers. And most of these were considered discouraged, unhealthy foods that are high in fat or sugar. Then I'd also like to report on a study that was conducted by our colleagues at the Center for Science in the Public Interest, Amina Batata, and she did a study where she took the tool that we had developed for our California Project Lean study and modified it and assessed a sample of schools in Montgomery County, Maryland. And what she found was really, I think, somewhat similar to what we've been finding in our California studies. So first of all, an interesting finding is that the types of marketing and advertising in elementary schools was quite different than what's found in high school. In elementary, it was really more of these subtle, indirect types of marketing efforts where there were activities that schools did where they collected the box tops and then got some sort of a prize. They used corporate-sponsored curriculum, or they had certain nights at fast food restaurants where teachers had to work and then the school would get a percentage of the profits. Whereas high schools really had the direct advertising, primarily from vending machine ads. The next few slides just catalog some of the types of marketing activities that the Maryland study found and how many schools had those. So no schools had scholarships. A few schools had sponsorships where a food or beverage company would actually sponsor the school and give them money or resources. a little over 10% use corporate-sponsored curricula, and then a number of schools used giveaways, so coupon or food product giveaways, where the students in the school would actually get either free food products or coupons to go get a discount or get a food item for free. And then they found a lot of activity with fundraisers. So half of the schools sold foods for fundraisers. Again, the most common items sold were higher sugar, high fat items. It's interesting to see, since we do so much work in California, to see that this is really going on all over the country. And then, as I mentioned, for elementary schools, a lot of the schools were working to get these kind of proof of purchase box top items, where they collect these items from students and parents and then get some sort of a prize at the end. And then also many of the schools were participating in fundraising events that are actually at a restaurant. So there's the McDonald's McTeacher Nights, where teachers have to go and work at a McDonald's, and then McDonald's will give the school some of the profits from that evening. Schools have school supplies with corporate logos and things like that on them. And then about half of the schools that participated in the Maryland study did say they had some sort of a policy that addressed food and beverage advertising, but the language in these policies was really not very specific. So finally, based on this research, we have some recommendations for addressing food and beverage marketing in schools. And first, it's really to eliminate the marketing and advertising of unhealthy food products. And that this should really be done through adopting written policies that specify what types of food and beverage marketing are and are not allowed on campuses. And that it seems quite effective to include these in wellness policies, or perhaps consider adopting state legislation, which would limit food and beverage marketing in schools. And then finally, it's extremely important to address all forms of food and beverage marketing, not just the obvious advertising, but all of these more subtle forms as well. And then finally, for those of you who are ready to start working on addressing food and beverage marketing, California Project Lean has put together a toolkit that really will get schools moving on this issue. It includes an assessment tool for looking at your campus and what types of food and beverage marketing exist there. It includes a report on the assessment that we did that described the types of food and beverage marketing and could serve as a model for something done locally. And then there's a whole toolkit on what schools can do to really change their food and beverage marketing landscape. So before I finish, I'd just like to thank all of my colleagues who've helped me with all of this work, including Amina at Center for Science and the Public Interest, and Vicki and Peggy at California Project Lean, and my whole team at Samuels & Associates, and especially Sarah Samuels. All right, do I have time for a question? No. All right, maybe later.